This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Living with a rare disease can already be challenging and even more so during a global pandemic like COVID-19. So in conjunction with SMA Awareness Month, on this Brainwaves episode, we're speaking to neurogeneticist Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, as well as Siti Safura Jaapa, who lives with spinal muscular atrophy and is the founder of SMA Malaysia. And I'd like to find out how people with rare diseases, especially SMA, are coping, as well as how the pandemic has affected the advocacy for access to much needed treatment in Malaysia. How are the both of you today, Dr. Azlina and Safura?
Yeah, thank you. I'm great.
I'm good, thank you.
Dr. Azlina, for the benefit of our listeners, and I think it's a bit of a refresher because I know we've covered SMA before, but could you just briefly run through again what spinal muscular atrophy is and how it affects people who are diagnosed with it?
Sure. So SMA is what's known as a neuromuscular disorder. So that means that there is something wrong with the neurons that send information to the muscles. And over time, because the muscles aren't getting that information, they then tend to die. So that's where so you have spinal muscular atrophy. Atrophy means death. So death of the, or dying back of the muscles. And the symptoms of SMA is muscle weakness. So I'm unable to, you know, control movement effectively, problems with breathing. You cannot hold your head up. The children from young, they cannot sit up on their own. They cannot turn over. And gradually it starts to also affect the muscles between the rib cage. So then they also have problems with breathing and also swallowing.
I know we refer to SMA as a rare disease, Dr. Azlina, but what is the burden of it in Malaysia?
It's one of those rare but common genetic disorders. So it's not as common as thalassemia in Malaysia. But if you look at, there's been some sort of calculation that on average, there's about 500,000 babies born in Malaysia every year, and about 1 in 10 of those will be born with a form of SMA. And so you're looking at something like 50 babies born with SMA every year. The estimated incidence rate in Malaysia is about 1 in 20,000. So there are no official numbers really for SMA in Malaysia, unfortunately, but this is sort of based on global incidence rates as well.
All right. Safura, tell me a bit about yourself and your journey with SMA. Perhaps when were you diagnosed with the condition?
I'm being diagnosed with SMA quite later. Growing up as a kid with SMA is quite challenging. You know, it was a strange feeling to see when all my friends running here and there and I have to step very slowly with it from my daddy, and most of the time I've been left behind. So at first I'm quite distant myself because some of them look at me in curiosity. So I grew as a very shy, timid and lonely girl, although I love so much to join other kids to play and make friends with them. However, with the support of my parents, I could slowly overcome with my low self-esteem issues. So my mother was the one who motivated me a lot motivated me not to be a quitter in anything. So she always reminded me to work hard for my study and education. So, with this condition, my muscle getting weak progressively. So, previously, when I was a kid, I still could walk. But then when I grew up, then my body mass getting bigger. So my leg cannot support me anymore. So, yeah, I need some aid from my dad, I easily fell down. And then until when I was reach 15, I got a very bad sclerosis. And then during that time, the doctor asked me to go through a surgical, a spinal fuse surgery. But then during that time, the doctor only diagnosed me as muscular dystrophy. Duchenne, they diagnosed me through the physical symptom. And they tried to, doctor asked to do the biopsy, but maybe during that time, he didn't describe how the procedure is. So my parents not very agreed to do the biopsy because it took some my muscle to test. So and then the doctor say, oh, this kind of disease have no cure. So they're asking why we need to go further testing if there is no cure. So the doctor say, okay, if that's so, you just bring your child to do the physiotherapy so that the muscle will not weaken drastically. So my parents just bring me to the physiotherapy since 1988.
All right, but when were you finally properly diagnosed to have SMA?
It happened when I finished my bachelor degree in biotechnology. So during that time, I have some information while studying that I know about the cell biopsy and then the procedure. So I see, I feel like, okay, this disease have lingering in me without a confirmation, you know, because doctor keep changing from muscular dystrophy Duchenne and then come to limb girdle and then come to Becker. So I was just wonder through the years, the diagnosis keep changing and they cannot do the genetic testing on me. So I just go after the degree. I just asked my parents to go to my doctor in HKL and then asked her to do some biopsy. And then only that, I think it was in 2004, 2005, then I straight go for this biopsy. And then she's confirmed that I got the SMA2.
Yeah, so I think this perfectly describes, you know, this, what they call the diagnostic odyssey that many people living with SMA face, not just in Malaysia, but across the world. It's really important, I think, and, you know, Pura, of course, will agree that, you know, the doctors themselves need to be a little bit more aware about the options that are available for the families and to the patients. And actually, muscle biopsies now are quite rare. Usually, especially for SMA, you would be able to take blood sample or even a saliva sample would be fine. So the you know, Fura is describing, I think, many years of uncertainty, but actually, you know, it didn't need to be so, you know, if there had been proper advice and perhaps management and awareness, you know, and I think it's really important for the medical community who are first seeing these patients with symptoms suggestive of SMA to really, you know, think about, oh, where can I refer them to? For them to then get these proper tests done.
Yeah. Safura, I think finally being able to put the proper name to your condition, you know, after so many years, what difference does it make to you to know the diagnosis? Because as your parents said last time, if there's no cure, well, what's the point, right? So how did it feel for you to finally get a proper diagnosis? What difference did it make to your life?
We still have like a positive thinking about that every illness have their own cure. But if only we know the correct disease that we have, then we can lead the way to get the cure. If we don't know what is happening, what's the disease is, so how can we can go to the correct direction to get the cure? So by knowing that I have the SMA type 2, so it gives me hope. Although during that time, I know I know there is nothing. And then I keep I start searching whenever I know that I got SMA type 2, and then I get contact corresponding with the Cure SMA in US. So I learn about my own disease and what can I expect next. So I try to slow down the progress as much as I can through physiotherapy. Yeah.
So Dr. Azlina, from a clinical perspective, what is the next step? What can be expected for somebody like Safura? Is there a cure? Is there treatment?
So currently there are some treatment that are available. To call them a cure, I'm not sure whether they would qualify as the cure, except for one particular treatment, which is a form of gene therapy. So just to kind of explain maybe for the viewers, because then they'll understand what the treatment does. So for a person to develop SMA, it's actually due to changes in a gene known as SMN1. So and SMN1 stands for survival motor neuron 1, and it's a really important protein. It helps in the motor neurons to function properly and to keep all the right things happening in the motor neurons so they can stay alive, and so that it can then the motor neuron can pass that information onto the muscles. So if you don't have that protein, if you have an abnormal form of that protein, then the motor neuron then, of course, is unable to function properly. Now, what's really interesting is SMN1 has a very close, let's say, cousin, okay? And that's known as SMN2. And SMN2, like, let's say, you know, if you have an analogy, it's like a cousin who makes a little bit less money than SMN1. Okay? So SMN1 is the very successful family member, and SMN2 is the sort of, you know, less productive cousin. Okay? And so the less productive cousin makes about 10 to 15% less money, okay, than the SMN1. Okay, but theoretically, when you look at the structure of SMN2, this cousin, you could sort of make it turn into SMN1, right? So that it could behave like SMN1, or you could make the cousin, you could help the cousin make more money. So the therapy sort of either tries to replace the SMN1, and that's through gene therapy. So they try to replace the abnormal copy straight into the DNA so that the patient now can make SMN1, right, directly. Or you can trick the cousin into behaving like SMN1. And so the gene therapy to make SMN1, you know, you only need a single injection of it. Okay, and it will last a lifetime. It helps the motor neurons in the patient, but it's not transmitted germline. So the other treatment is nociresin, and together and as well as a very recently approved other therapy called risdiplam, they actually try to increase the amount of the cousin, the SMN2 protein, to compensate for the loss of SMN1. And those therapies, you know, if you look at the clinical trials, they have shown sort of to have vast improvements in the people who receive them. However, you know, it's very difficult to get that in Malaysia at the moment. And that's, of course, what the SMA community is trying to lobby for.
All right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, as well as Siti Safura Jaapar, who lives with spinal muscular atrophy and is also the founder of SMA Malaysia. This is our Brainwaves episode, and we are talking about living with a rare disease during COVID-19. And so, Dr. Azlina, you just mentioned some treatments and therapies which is not easily available in Malaysia. And as you said, the SMA community has been advocating and lobbying for you know, to make these treatments more widely accessible, affordable as well. So I want to find out how that journey has been going and how is it affected by all this attention suddenly turning to COVID-19. As well as when we come back from the break, I want to find out from Safura, you're pursuing a PhD in bioinformatics, and I want to know what are you looking at that could potentially help people living with SMA. So we will go into all that when we come back from this break. You're tuned to BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's our Brainwaves episode today. We're talking about living with a rare disease during COVID-19. And because it's SMA Awareness Month, we're speaking to Siti Safura Jaapa, who lives with SMA, that's spinal muscular atrophy. And she's also the founder of SMA Malaysia. And of course, with every Brainwaves episode, with me is Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist. And before the break, we heard about Safura's challenges growing up with SMA, which was not diagnosed until she had completed her bachelor's degree in university. And it was many years after facing a lot of challenges with things like mobility issues and low self-esteem and that, you know, diagnostic odyssey. Was that what you called it, Dr. Azlina?
That's right, yes.
So it describes really the ups and downs when people living with rare diseases can't put a name to their condition and can't find appropriate therapies for it. But Safura, now you're pursuing a PhD in bioinformatics. Can you tell us what you're researching about?
Okay, so my PhD research is on understanding a genetic of SMA patient in Malaysia, and I try to evaluate the role of gut microbiome on the disorder, trying to closing the knowledge gap. On this, I hope we allow for microbiota restoration through probiotics, you know, because the human... human intestinal tract is a place with a diverse and complex population of bacteria community, you know, and then which are required for good health, sustains, and also well-being. So the gut microbiota have co-evolved with human for many years and therefore established very close symbiotic relationship with human hosts. And it has been known for some time that SMA individual can experience gastrointestinal dysfunction, gut problems that includes like constipation, delayed gastric emptying. So the increased understanding of the gut microbiota and its impact on SMA patient health condition will definitely encourage some research effort into this microbiome-based therapeutic, so leading to improvement of SMA patient health quality.
All right. Dr. Azlina, in terms of the other research that's also looking into this particular area, what kind of progress has been made and how do you see Safura's work helping local research on SMA?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a really interesting area of research that she's looking at because, of course, as she mentioned, you know, the gut microbiome, how healthy your gut is has a knock-on impact on the rest of your body. And so understanding how we can improve that can, you know, help to alleviate some symptoms or, you know, delay the progression even, you know, perhaps just by being overall healthy and somehow... you know, keeping the neurons healthier longer. There isn't a lot of SMA research going on in Malaysia. There's a lot that's going on overseas, obviously. And I think, you know, it's sort of a problem that rare diseases generally have because for you to do research, you need to apply for funding. And sometimes, you know, there's less focus on rare disease research. So sometimes, you know, it falls through the crack a little bit and doesn't get the type of support that is really needed. There is some research some papers that have been published on, you know, the different, being they've done the genetic testing, and then they would describe the different types of SMA that that they found in their cohort or in their group of patients. So that would be driven very much by the clinicians, you know, meeting the patients. And then there are also some research that is sort of looking at now the impact of living with SMA as well, you know, the challenges that they face and everything. So, but a lot more needs to be done, right, Fura?
Yeah, because, you know, like my research focus is a bit... less people doing it. Instead, I need to come up with my own set of data because it's not available in the publicly online. So yeah, so I need to do some lab work and offer the in silico lab work, so to generate the data and then to make sense of it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's why what you're doing is so important, you know, because it's something really novel that no one else is looking at. And, you know, I think that's it's wonderful.
I hope this can help many of SMA children, individuals in Malaysia.
I'm just curious to know, like, because if you, you would have had to have recruited people living with SMA into your study, and how did you find that? Is the community open to taking part in these types of research studies?
Well, you know, because I've setting up the association first before I pursue my PhD. Because while I'm developing the association SMEM during that time, and I could see some of the patients have a diet problem, some got put on weight, and some are very thin, and I just wonder why they are various condition of their way of their eating, and then the gut health, and most of them have the constipation problem. So I was wondering, and I start searching, or maybe I can have this area which is not yet been discovered, because people are very busy doing the genetic testing and everything, right? Clinical tests may take sometimes like 5 years and above to come up with the new drugs like that. But I think along the way, we need to still keep healthy and then live with healthy life. So I hope I can contribute some in that side, instead of giving the full, like, this is drug. So I just like a supplement, something like that, to make them healthier until they find the drug.
All right. Safura, I also want to find out about the kinds of challenges that you faced in the education system. I mean, you talked a little bit about it in the context of, you know, when you were growing up, but you've really gone through the entire system, you know, from childhood and tertiary education, and now you're pursuing research as well. Can you share about the challenges that you faced as somebody who has a rare disease that affects your mobility and your, you know, ability to do some of the daily routines?
Okay, so I went to a mainstream education school. During that time, what we call a special education is not yet introduced. So, but still, I'm grateful that my parents sent me to the normal school. Though there are so many challenges, you know, there was a time where I have to move from the first class to the third class because, yeah, the teacher feel that I might slow the proactive pace of the bright student, something like that. It's just like they assume that since I have disabilities and also I have cognitive disabilities as well, which is it's not true.
It's clearly not true. You're doing a PhD.
It's not true, but despite being sending out, I got a very warm welcome in the new classes. And then, well, the grief turned into a great gift, I think, because every time I gone through the challenges, God will send me some kind people to help me to solve the problem. So, you know, although I did well during the PSR and enabled me to further study into a secondary boarding school, but, you know, a boarding school, the infrastructure is mostly of them are not handicap friendly. So I need to change school. So I just go to the normal school. But I found so many kind people over there. And during that time, I started using wheelchair as I couldn't stand longer than 10 seconds. So I was so lucky that my mother was also a teacher in that school. So make any negotiation with the school become easier than before. So so I just actively joined the co-curriculum, the curriculum. And then during that secondary school, potential as a school teenager was like unleashed. I joined the girl guy. I joined the competition, chess tournament, sort of like that. So, but it went quite smooth during the secondary school. But SMA weakened my body muscle quite progressively, as I told that I got scoliosis and it getting worse day by day. And it was a hard decision when doctor asked me to do the spinal fusion surgery. It was a major risky operation. But I really want to thank the surgeon who really gave me a different point of view about life, you know. During that time, I was so, down. But then the spinal surgeon convinced my parents and me that the surgery must be done as soon as possible to prevent my spinal S-curve become worse, you know. And it took a whole year to think about it and to make a decision. So it was end of year school holiday, 1998. I just finished my PMR, and then that night, I still remember that night, I was so nervous and I was so anxious. I cried a lot that night because the next day is the operation. But then it took some minutes to calm down and my parents come together. But alhamdulillah, the operation finished successfully. And that year, it become happier because my operation successful, and also I got flying color for PMR. Double celebration, I think.
Such a tough decision to make at such a young age, you know.
Yeah, 15. I'm only 15, and then doctor said, if you want to further your study, you need to do this. He even asked, what do you want to do when you grow up? So I said, I just want to be a doctor because they inspire me a lot. See, and then he said, okay, if you want to be a doctor, you need to go to university. So do you think that you can go to university if you cannot sit even because of your curve? Although it's quite risky, but you need to be brave. At a certain point, you need to be brave and then go for it.
Dr. Zelina, I think Safura's story also illustrates how, I mean, even though we're talking about a genetic disease, we're talking about vast impact on every patient's life from the time that they start, exhibiting the characteristics and symptoms, right? And also then how it ripples out and affects their family and their community. Safura has made tough choices and she's been very brave as well. But she's also been, I think, privileged to see great healthcare professionals who've supported her. Is that the case across the board for most people living with SMA in Malaysia? What are the kinds of challenges when we're talking about not just the gene therapy or those kinds of issues, right? But just being able to live the life that they deserve.
Right. So the challenges that they face is kind of throughout, really, you know, as Fura mentioned, even the diagnosis, you know, getting that diagnosis and how they receive that diagnosis from the doctors and, you know, dealing with it, the psychological impact. And then if you are the parent, you know, now the decision about the child's education, you know, and trying to get the child into school, because people with SMA, they actually are above average in intelligence. And there's nothing wrong. They can cope with the normal school curriculum. It's just that the school infrastructure doesn't allow them to do it. And we hear so many stories, and Fura, of course, will know so many stories of, you know, the children being rejected or having a really tough time, you know, being given, you know, the right kind of support in the school. So then of course, you know, after that, employment and overall, you know, just the kind of support for their mental health is also quite lacking. And then I'd just like to mention as well, you know, the genetic counseling is also not widely available. So, you know, we have families where, you know, they because they didn't receive the diagnosis for, say, the first child, they were unaware that they were also at risk of having other children with SMA. And so, you know, there are multiple layers. And so there's a lot that needs to be done. You know, there needs to be better carrier testing for Malaysians. One in 50 of us is a carrier, you know, and if you get two carriers who then have children, their children then have a 25% chance of having SMA, 50% of their children will be carriers. You know, so it's a real public health issue that needs so much more attention.
We'll go for another quick break. And when we come back, I want to look at how people living with SMA and other rare diseases were affected by COVID-19 and the MCO, and also how all the attention on COVID-19 is affecting access to care and the advocacy to make drugs for SMA accessible and available to Malaysians. How has this been affected here in Malaysia? So I'm speaking to Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist, as well as Siti Safura Jaapa, who is living with spinal muscular atrophy and is also the founder of SMA Malaysia. Stay tuned. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living. I'm T. Xiao Yik. And on today's show, we are doing our Brainwaves episode with Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, neurogeneticist. And joining her is Siti Safura Jaapa, who is living with SMA or spinal muscular atrophy and is also the founder of SMA Malaysia, which is a support group for patients and caregivers here in Malaysia. It is SMA Awareness Month, and we have heard from Safura about the research that she's doing for her PhD in bioinformatics, and she's looking at the role of gut microbiome in potentially alleviating the symptoms of SMA and also perhaps delaying the progression. And it is a very novel area of research that Safura is doing. And, you know, she's the best person to really be looking at this because she has gone through so many challenges in getting a diagnosis for her condition, first of all, and in pursuing her education. And despite all of those obstacles, she has come to this point. And, you know, Safura, you said you wanted to be a doctor. That was your ambition when you were a child. When you finish your PhD, you will carry that doctor title. But let's very quickly, Safura, look at what's been happening all around the world now with COVID-19. For you and others living with SMA, as well as other rare diseases, how did the community cope during the movement control order? What were some specific challenges that faced people with rare diseases?
Most of the SMA patients do their activities indoors. And we really, through our society, we keep on reminding them to do the SOP tightly and then no need to go out. Because, you know, SMA patient is among a high-risk group prone to get infected. And it will get worse rapidly as most of the patients have respiratory problems. We are easily to get flu and then we hard to clear our throat by ourselves. It will be very devastating. So what we have in SMA, we during the MCO, we have a WhatsApp group and it become merrier with the discussion. And we also do the virtual meeting and some of the families are also not so well. During the MCO, the parents cannot open the business and cannot go to work. So we managed to help them with some basic, you know, aid, a ration and some additional stuff such as giving them a formulated meal, diapers and small pocket money. We try our best to help them in any aspect, you know. Since COVID, SMA Malaysia have organized a meeting, and recently we just have finished our first webinar titled Medicine, Treatment and Care for SMA Child. But coming up, we are going to have a series of workshops for the SMA youth to develop their skill according to their passion. So we try our best to do as much as we can indoors.
Dr. Azlina, from a policy and resource perspective, what are your concerns for patients with rare diseases with a lot of resources being directed to COVID-19 now?
Well, number one is the, during that time, they were unable to have face-to-face hospital consultations. So there was a lot of, you know, the care, the management of the disease fell, you know, a lot on the families, and the families may not be trained, you know, sufficiently. So we need to help. We need to foresee that this might happen again, you know, and find some way to sort of equip the families, in particular the caregivers, you know, here the parents or other family members who are helping to care, you know, how to manage at home, but also, you know, find a way as well how the healthcare professionals can also reach out, you know, and I know that for some rare diseases as well as other diseases like for dementia and everything, that, you know, people are having phone consultations and WhatsApp video consultations and that kind of thing. So at least you get to see the patient and, you know, just make them feel that they are still in, you know, still being followed up. You know, I think that's important for them psychologically to not feel that they're just sort of forgotten about. And so, you know, those kind of things need to be formalized in some kind of way, you know. And apart from that, you know, as I said, there's still so much still that needs to be done. And of course, the main thing is to get a Rare Disease Act, that the rare disease community is still fighting very hard for that. And, you know, I hope we're almost close to getting it. And then after that, to formalize an Orphan Drug Act in Malaysia, you know, and to decide on the definitions of what would be included in there. And so I know there are some conversations that have been going on, but, you know, with the whole COVID-19, it's sort of been a little bit derailed. So, you know, I hope that the ministry will kind of regather and refocus and look back on the notes from a few months ago and still start going through that to-do list, because that to-do list is still there and yeah, it's still really important. Yeah.
Yeah. Has the advocacy for SMA drugs, for instance, you mentioned risdiplam or even gene therapy, mm-hmm, has that lobbying been affected or derailed as well?
Yes, I mean, inevitably, because with a lot of these negotiations, it's really very important to meet them face to face and really get them to understand. And I know there was a lot that was going on pre-MCO, and then, you know, all these meetings that you hope will kind of push the agenda further, but then, you know, people get distracted with the COVID-19. So, of course, you know, of course it has been a significant disruption.
Can I ask you, Safura, because Dr. Azlina mentioned that, you know, patients and their families and their caregivers really needed support to know how to continue their care at home, especially during the lockdown. And if we foresee that COVID-19 is going to be with us in time to come, or there could potentially even be another pandemic, people living with SMA and other rare diseases will continue to be those who are most vulnerable. So for you, what sort of support would you like to see from the government during these kinds of health crises?
Yeah, if the KKM can reach out through the NGOs, because some of the patients cannot go to hospital to have their checkups, and like Dr. Azlina said, we have like virtual checkup like that. So at least they know that they are not being abandoned due to COVID. But we as SMEM, we also try to keep them calm down and then just organize any activities online so that they not get bored, because some of them need to. Even myself, I got stuck at house about 7 months like that. So it's quite if we don't have anything to do at home, we will easily get crazy or something like that. So just find anyway, whether we do like online meetings, activities with through art or through music, series of talks, we try our best to help our community.
Okay, we're running out of time, but Safura, you know, can I ask you for a final message from you, not only in conjunction with SMA Awareness Month and what we've been talking about, but also because it's also International Youth Day. And I think you are an inspiration to young people because of how you've overcome all your challenges. You are now pursuing a PhD. You're even a Paralympics athlete in chess. And so would you have a final message for young people living with SMA?
What I can say that they should know that they are very lucky living in this era, which they can find many things in the tip of their fingers. Compared to my time during I was a kid, so they should not feel down. Try to be happy, be creative. It's a lot of things you can explore online. If you cannot go outside, you still can do something like chess, for example. I'm not the only SMA patient play chess. We have several now. We have 3 Paralympic athletes playing chess, and we have 2 Paralympic athletes playing boccia. All of them are SMA patients. So we try to encourage them to look into sports, Paralympic sport. We try to feed them according their passion, whether they like to do arts. We even if they like to learn. So we try to encourage their parents to help them, because they cannot do it alone. They must have parent support. I'm quite grateful. I have a very strong support from my parents and family.
Dr. Azlina, do you have a final message for us?
Yes. As Guru said, you know, the SMA youth can feel empowered, you know, and we need to see that they can do things, and we need to help them as the general public. But as this is SMA Awareness Month, you know, I would strongly hope that, you know, the listeners can be proactive. You know, if you've never heard of SMA, please, you know, Google it and look up some, you know, support groups that you can follow so that you can find out a little bit more about what they go through. So, you know, Safura mentioned SMA Malaysia. They have a Instagram and Facebook, and there's also the weekend journey. So just read up on SMA and see, you know, what you can do, the various events and activities that they organize. Just sort of, you know, come to some of those and, you know, help to fundraise and spread knowledge about it. You know, I think that's what we can do, you know, as the general public.
All right. And as you said, 1 in 50 Malaysians is a carrier. So
that's
carrier.
Right.
Learning about the condition enables you to get carrier testing, especially if you're considering to start a family.
That's true.
Or if you are considering more children, right? Thank you so much for speaking to me today, Dr. Azlina Amar Anwar, neurogeneticist, and of course, Siti Safura Japa, living with SMA and founder of SMA Malaysia. This has been our Brainwaves episode in conjunction with SMA Awareness Month. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.